Hi, and welcome to yet another episode of The Leadership Enigma, and we are hurtling towards episode 200. Every time I say that, I have literally no idea how that's happened, Margot. But you don't want to miss this episode because there are a couple of words that you may hear in the context of leadership, and that's love and fear. But what part do they really play in the self-awareness of a leader, in a leader's ability to lead other people, and in a leader's ability to lead an organization with passion? So I always have to talk to someone who's far wiser than me. So join me just after this, where I talk to the wonderful Margot Faraci, and she will share her research, her wisdom. She's another recovering lawyer, and we'll dig into this. Come back to me just after this. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Margot, it's a huge warm welcome. Thank you so much for traveling all the way from Australia to the Leadership Enigma.
I mean, who doesn't want to be in the UK in January when you could be on the beach in Australia?
Seriously, what are you doing, Margot?
Well, I love my daughter. We're going to talk about love. Right. I love my daughter and she's here at school. So we thought we'd come over and see her.
And you also came to the Leadership Enigma.
We did.
See the way I did that?
Yes, I did.
To make
it's very
it
clever.
This is a bespoke
very
trip.
Very clever.
Now, I did no real introduction. You are a leader in your own right. You're an author. You're a writer. You're a fellow podcaster.
Yeah.
So that's another episode altogether.
Yeah.
And we were introduced through your PR agency. Mm. And straight away, you are focusing on a subject which is dear to my heart. Love, leadership. And the reason that I wanted us to have a conversation is the work that I'm passionate about is about human-centered leader, mm-hmm. that deep human connection. And the eight components that I'm working of all are surrounding one word, and that is care. If you don't care for people, then please don't lead.
Mm.
But I would love to know a little bit about love and fear, but I'm not ready yet. I want to know a little bit about you.
Ooh.
Tell us about you.
Well, you know, I'm doing this because I care how we treat each other.
Yep.
You know, I really care about how we treat people. So when I was 10, I decided I wanted to be a lawyer because, you know, that's about how we treat each other. And I did that, and I found out on about lunchtime of day one that being a lawyer in the context I was in had nothing to do with how we treat each other.
Welcome to that group.
And you know what? There's some lawyers out there doing great things yes. around human rights. And you know, truth is, Adam, I was never very good at it either. So
it was kind of fun at the time.
It's
right?
kind of fun at the time. And being grad lawyer in Sydney is a lot of fun at right. a global firm. And so there were gifts from that, but ultimately I went into banking, which sounds like the last
place. And fire?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Losing friends along the way. I think journalist probably is the last thing I could do just to really lose the remaining of my friends. But what I found was, you know, I got into leadership positions, and honestly, I've kind of been the person who found it easy to lead the whole way through. My year two report does say Margot is a natural leader.
What does that mean though, Margot?
Well, I could always get people to follow me.
Right.
And when I was younger and at school, I did it through fear, you know, and that was about me and my insecurity. I was a bit of a mean girl.
Were you?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Well, this podcast is all about that now. Then.
Yeah. So when I talk about love and fear and leadership, I'm talking from experience because right. I know how easy it is when you can influence people for good or for better.
Where did that come from? So I'm intrigued by that. You said you were a bit of a mean girl.
Yeah, I was.
Well, how come?
I think there was a background for me that had a lot of that persecutor energy in it, and right. I thought that was the way, you know, that was the way to be. And I was deeply insecure. I mean, that's what it comes from.
What age are we talking here?
I grew out of it when I was 14. So
early mean girl.
Probably 10 to 14. I was pretty mean. And I had to always be in the middle of things, and I found that people would gravitate towards me.
But for the wrong reasons, potentially.
Well, what they wanted to do was attach themselves to power.
Right.
And that used to annoy me because I thought, you don't care about me, you just want to attach yourself to power. And then that made me paranoid about retaining power. So, you know, happily I grew out of by the time I was in what we call year nine.
What a fascinating early lesson.
Yeah, and I've felt really embarrassed. Once I saw the error of it, I felt really embarrassed by it and by the way I treated people. So growing up, you know, then I sort of led a different way, informally, of course.
Yeah.
And then getting into banking leadership positions and, you know, captains in sport and that sort of stuff. I played a lot of sport. What I found was actually if you love yourself enough to lead with confidence,
yes,
and to not be that threatening kind of leader, then actually it's everyone's happier, including me.
I have so many questions already. I've got to go backwards. I use this phrase a lot. I've got to go backwards, go forwards. You said there was a little bit of a change in you around about 14.
Yeah.
Where you learnt a lesson.
Yeah.
How? Did you learn that yourself or did someone intervene and say, I need to give you a little bit of feedback?
I grew up. I just grew up. I just
I became
a young woman and
at 14?
Yeah, absolutely. And I grew up and I could see that the friends that I'd attracted
right.
were there with me for the wrong reasons.
Right.
And so it like all transformation, it involves letting go of what's safe and what's known.
Right.
And for the first time in my life I kind of went out on my own. And I remember going to school halfway through year nine and actually turning up and thinking for the first time ever, this is how it feels to not have people around me, you know, because I'd always found that very easy. So, but I just grew up and I had a mother who was very kind and
About to ask about parental influence.
Yeah, so I had a mother who was very kind.
Yep.
And she was my role model of what it is to be a woman. Now, that has its own implications, which we can talk about, because then you can go into over-rescuing and taking responsibility for everyone else's outcomes, which right. in corporate leadership is everywhere.
Or not sustainable.
And not everywhere and not sustainable. Yep. But people think that that's strong leadership. It's not. There's a difference between being kind and being a rescuer. But I decided that's actually who I was.
Yeah.
That's actually who I was. And we have to go through different parts. I mean, you've got teenagers, I've got teenagers.
Yeah.
You find your way.
Okay. And you talked about your mother's impact there, father's impact.
So dad was a migrant from Italy to Australia. And so
that's why you said Pacifico.
Pacifico, yeah. It's a hard, away. It's a soft C if it's followed by an I. We know that. And so he, you know, he was a self-made man. And so that required a lot of drive, that required a lot of self-belief.
Yeah.
That could tip into what I now call persecutor leadership a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And probably that's what I was copying in my early years as a kid. And ultimately there's great gifts from what I learned from him.
Mm.
But I've combined the two, I would say.
So in some ways we're a product of our environment, aren't we?
We absolutely are. And if you, I always say when I'm helping people with leadership, I always say your first job as a leader is to know yourself and understand why you're doing things.
Otherwise you can't lead other
you
people,
can't.
Can you?
You
we're
can't. Not, and your reaction that. To something is about you. It's not about the situation.
So you've gone through this mean girl streak to some reflection, to law, to banking.
Yeah.
How did you get into, because you're passionate about leadership.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, what I realised was, you know, I think you get to about 40. I'm 48 now and I got to about 40 and realised, you know, you kind of work out what your superpower is. I mean, we can all reasonably articulate. We can all do stuff with numbers. We can, you know, like there's stuff that we can.
That's why I became a lawyer.
I'm sure you can. But I realised that the way I was leading, which for so many years I thought was wrong because it was so different to what I saw around me, was actually the thing that was making people want to work for me, and it was what was making me successful. I did, I think I was probably clinically burnt out at 40 and I took some time off and I was never going back into the corporate world again.
Okay.
And actually what happened was my worst fear was realised. I sort of took enough time off that I became irrelevant and couldn't get calls returned when I was trying to get back in. But you know, I do believe you're given what you need, and that gave me more time for reflection on how I did want to go back in. And then I found out about this dichotomy between fear and love, and that's when I realised if I were to go back in, I had to go back in a different way because the way I'd been leading, while it was loving for everyone else, it was actually quite fearful for me. I'm high perfectionism, always worried about my numbers. I've always been a P&L owner, so I've always got every Monday, you know, you get graded against your peers.
Do you like to be in control?
Yeah, because that reduces you. You know, this is it's a delusion.
And control, reduces the risk. Allegedly.
Yeah, but control's a delusion. Certainty's a delusion. But you know, at the time, I thought if I do this and I do that, I'll have control. It's a delusion, and the sooner I accepted that, the better. But that's when I started reading about this difference between fear and love, and I decided, well, if I am going to go back in, and I do, because most of us need to work for a living, then I want to do that from love, not from fear. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to play with that and see how that goes. And everything changed.
Right, we're going to get on to that. You said something which I want to go back to as well. You talked about feeling irrelevant. I think that's a really powerful feeling, isn't it? And when we talk to a lot of CEOs in our travels, the one thing they fear the most is their organization becoming irrelevant and being disrupted and not the disruptor. Yeah. And we could talk about monolithic, iconic brand, which here today, gone tomorrow, in a world that constantly changes. So people fear being irrelevant. And I've had people come in and talk about digital transformation and AI, and it's going to make people irrelevant. Mm. And so that's a very tangible fear that a lot of people talk about. Tell me a little bit more about your experience of, as you're saying, coming out of the race in order to, in some ways, to self-protect and then starting to feel irrelevant. Mm. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, always the question is what happens when the worst happens?
Okay.
Because my worst fear,
well,
my worst fear was insolvency, because I was primarily responsible for the income for the household, and the kids were, you know, we had young kids. So we didn't, you know, we didn't bump up against that happily.
So that's fear straight away.
Yeah. But my second fear was that I'd pop when I did want to go back in, I would be irrelevant. And that absolutely was realized. So here's the thing, and this goes to the crux of the difference between fear and love. Things happen. Things happen. Stuff happens. So you might as well find the gift from them. You might as well decide you're going to find the benefit and the lesson. And so actually when that kept happening, when, you know, and when people did return my calls, they were offering me jobs that were way too, you know, junior for me, and my experience wasn't recognised and all those sort of things. I just kept saying, okay, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
You can only do – the universe does reward action, I believe. So, you know, you've got to have a plan and you've got to follow your plan, and you do get reward from that. But right now today – no one's returning my calls, and when they are, they're for things that I know they're going to send me back into fear. So what am I going to do with that? Well, I'm going to hold, and I'm going to trust, and I'm going to, here's the word, love myself enough to know that I'm really good at what I do. I've got a very strong intention around a greater good, and the right thing will show up. So in the end, I actually got offered a couple of things that I said no to with nothing else on the horizon, because I knew that those situations and those letters would send me back into fear.
I'm reflecting on what you're saying, because I think everyone must go through, and every leader must go through a period of fear.
Because how can you not?
Yeah. And that's why there was something, it was weird, isn't it? That when I was reading your bio and the work you were doing, something resonated where I just thought, you and I are going to have a really cool conversation. It's weird, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you spiritual? Is there a spiritual part?
I am
to you?
Recently. I'm not religious. I was brought up without religion, but I'm
hearing something.
Well, I do like to find meaning.
Yeah,
absolutely. And not everyone is, and that's okay. But my view is, well, you know, there's so much in life that happens, and you can either, I mean, it's natural to get regretful and sad and angry, and like go through all that by all means. Feel what you needed to feel. But ultimately, the job is to find the benefit. I just believe that whatever's given to me is to my benefit. And there's, you know, horrific things are given to us all the time. But it's got to be for my benefit, and I can make it for my benefit. That's not to say that we don't go through those really uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah.
It's really important to go through those without self-blame or self-shame, you know.
Long story short, we went through a very challenging time with my daughter, which I've spoken about before, and it's another episode for another time. But we've spoke to some people who actually said, actually, she's the gift that keeps on giving because of
100%.
The lessons that have...
She's teaching you.
Yes.
I don't know what happened, and I'm sorry for it, but she is teaching you all the time. And oh my God.
She's doing good now.
You're great.
But we went through a period
I'm pleased to hear that.
When you're in and this is relevant, because when you're in a difficult time, we all go through it.
Yeah.
It comes to a point where you've got to decide, am I going to be a victim, and actually is this kind of the end of who I think I am?
Mm.
Or am I able to be resilient enough to start to understand the lessons in order to change?
100%.
But that's tough though, isn't it?
Well, that's tough. And it's okay. Like I don't want to skip over. I think I get quite frustrated by this, you know, good vibes only. We must be positive all the time. It's ridiculous. We're human.
It's unrealistic.
And there's this discomfort that we feel. I mean, I was all at sea. I was completely isolated in that moment. And that's just work. I mean, worse things happen to you in your personal life, as you've just articulated. Yeah.
But it's a big part of who we are.
Well, you must go through it. You got to feel the fear and go ahead anyway. That's what I think. And if you can find the love avenue, which is, okay, well, what's my intention here? My intention is to go back in this example. My intention is to go back into the corporate world and make a big difference, very purposefully. That's a powerful intention. So what am I going to do with that fear? I'm going to change it to love, and I'm going to say, I love myself enough to know that I'm good at what I do. I love myself enough to know that what needs to show up will show up. And you know, I love what I do enough to know that I can make a difference in it.
Isn't this a battle that most people as human beings are having, that actually they're either lying to themselves, or they're actually dealing with the inner critic, or they're actually dealing with some element of self-loathing? Or, I mean, it's just part and parcel of who we are, isn't
it? So let's not ignore it. You know, let's not ignore it.
Well, most people do, though, right?
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that, I mean, that's my mission, really. It is all the great, I'm not religious, but the great thing about not having a religion is that I'm interested in all of them. And so what that means is I do go and read a lot of things, and most of the major religions do talk about we're only ever motivated by either fear or by love.
Right.
And so if we can, and what we know is due to the survey, the research that I did last year, which backed up my experience, is that many leaders are operating with unconscious fear. And if you don't care about that for yourself or your people, you should care about it for performance, because it's costing, you know, over 2 billion, that's billion with a B, pounds of productivity in the UK alone annually. So that's hard to identify. But once you identify that you are operating with fear, then you've got a choice. And fear, you know, for people who are wondering, what's she talking about? Fear can mean you're avoidant, which is certainly the fear response I had early in my leadership. That fear is, you know, I'm going to go along with stuff in the meeting, but I actually don't agree with any of it.
Right.
Fear can be aggression. That's the obvious, you know, that's the obvious thing that we all know about. But it can be just playing small and not being your full self, and that is going to lead you to be resentful and disengaged.
Okay. So this is a nice segue now into perhaps the research. So we understand now the context about you decided to come back into the game on your own terms and actually say this is about finding that balance between love and fear.
Yeah.
Am I summarising okay here? And so that was in some ways going to be your North Star and coming back, as I say, on your terms. Tell me a little bit about the research so that people who are listening and watching this can understand the provenance of why and how this is so important to business.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about
that. What I found was, so I came back in and I decided I understood myself better. I had the gift of irrelevance, which meant
if anyone who's had kids, we become irrelevant quite quickly. And embarrassing.
And so there's avoidance is the term for what they want to do is when they're teenagers.
Okay.
What I found was I thought I'm just going to play with it. What's the worst that can happen? Okay, I go back to being irrelevant again, you know.
Okay.
So I came back in and, of course, I felt all the old fears, all the old inner critics coming back.
Yeah.
That's natural. But I just decided every now and then to step in to notice it and see what I could do to change that to love. And so what that created for me was a braver, clearer, fairer leadership. And that meant that people wanted to work for me. And the performance skyrocketed. Honestly, the performance of my business skyrocketed, and I kept getting more and more opportunities, bigger ones than I'd ever actually imagined that I would, because you just show up differently.
Right.
And so then I thought, okay, well, you know, I didn't want to be the CEO of a bank. You know, that's not anything I ever wanted to aspire to. But because I'd uncovered this, and because, you know, they say once you're conscious, you can never be unconscious again.
Right.
So then I could see around me how much unconscious fear there was around me, and I understood it because it's how I used to be. And often still am, Adam, because I'm human. So let's never lose sight of that aspect. Yeah, like I haven't nailed it. No one has. And so then I thought, well, actually, this could be the mission. This could actually be the mission to transform leadership globally and end fear-based leadership. So that's what I'm doing.
So tell us a little bit. You gave a few stats there, but just tell us a little bit about the relevance of this subject to performance.
Yeah, okay.
And then let's go into the definitions that you are working on in relation to love and fear. And its
yeah, great. Okay, so what I wanted to do next was then say, okay, well, this is my experience and I've got a story around that and I know it's real, but can we get data to back it up? So I went and did research across the US, the UK, and Australia, and what we found is that about a third of leaders are leading with fear in those markets. Okay. Well, unconscious fear, and it's probably more because it's not conscious, right? So how do you sort of work out what unconscious fear is and who's leading with it? And what we know that, you know, here in the UK, that's costing over $2 billion in productivity annually. Now, what does that also mean? Besides all that, if you don't care about the numbers, care about the people, care about yourself, what does that mean? That teams are burnt out, leaders are burnt out, They're not being themselves. People don't want to work for the leaders they've got. There is such a low expectation of leadership, you know. And really, I would say what we found in the UK is really similar to Australia, which is not a surprise given our culture very much follows yours, is that the single biggest problem we have in corporates in leadership is avoidance. People just not dealing with difficult things because we're all so polite.
Well,
we don't want to hurt people, you know, we don't want to hurt. But love leaders are brave and they're clear and they're fair and they step into difficulty. They go hard on the issue, soft on the person, but they don't put up.
Oh, I quite like that phrase, hard on the issue, soft on the person.
And if you have, I always talk about the toxic high performer and, you know, the one who gets all the, makes all the money and the clients love them, but they're actually horrific to their team.
Yeah. Don't tolerate brilliant jerks, but many organisations do.
Well, because we've got to make the numbers, you know, and people, leaders will say, and I've done it, but they're great with the clients, you know. Or I also talk about the really nice underperformer. Yeah. So the person who's really nice in the team, probably been there quite a long time, organises all the social catch-ups, but actually is not doing their job and everyone's covering for them. These are the two predominant prototypes that I've dealt with in my career. And when I talk about that with the teams I work with and in my speeches and things, they're the ones that people most attach to because there are so many fearful beliefs about not being able to step in and do something about those situations.
Let me just pause on there because everyone is probably knows those characters that you've just described where you've got the superstar who is actually toxic to the culture and the underperformer.
Just look at football teams.
Who is almost the energy driver of it.
Yeah.
What does a leader in that situation do with those two different ends of the scale? Do you try and pull them in? Do you get rid?
A love response. Okay, let's go with the fear response.
Okay.
The fear response is it's not happening, ignore it. With the toxic high performer, my fear response is they make heaps of money. It's not causing that much damage. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
Avoidant. Probably, and with the really nice underperformer, the fear response is, well, you know, they do so much for the team and they're a really good person.
Yeah.
And by the way, I was probably a really nice underperformer when I was a lawyer, just so we all know. I don't want to give the impression that I've been perfect at things. And someone should have had a conversation with me, Adam. That's the fear response. There's another fear response, which is actually ignore the person and hope that they'll get the message. That's big.
Right.
It's horrific, but it's big.
And that's just hoping for the best, isn't it?
Yeah, but actually just don't have your one-on-one meetings with them. Don't give them any coaching and hope they'll get the message.
Yeah.
Or tell someone else and give them the message that way. I've seen that as well.
Again, that's a crazy avoidant process.
Yeah, but you know, the listeners will know that happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. So a love response is to go brave, clear and fair.
Brave, clear and fair. All right.
So hard on the issue, soft on the person. So Adam, you know, if you're my toxic high performer,
am I the example?
I can't imagine this has ever been you.
use me as an example.
That's why we're
Margo.
So safe to
it's,
use you because exactly. It's never going to be a problem for you.
Oh, bless you. You see, I knew we'd be friends.
And so it would be, Adam, are you aware of the impact you're having? So go in with curiosity.
Yeah.
Don't go in with judgment. I mean, you talk about curiosity all the time.
So again, it's the open question.
Yeah. Do you know? Here's some points. Here's some observations I've made, and state your intention. What is the highest good you can do in this conversation as a leader? Adam, my intention is to help you realize whatever potential you've got.
Yeah.
That is the thing I care about so that our team can be successful. Do you understand the impact you're having? You know, and often you go, what? Huh? What? That's the first time in 20 years someone's had a conversation with Adam. Now, in that moment, Adam's going to do a couple of things. He's going to...
Is this fight or flight?
Yeah. And it's probably not going to be pretty.
Right.
So don't take too much from what they do in that moment. Give them a few days to think about it. God, I've lost count of how many times I've done this. When they come back to you, set a date for having a further conversation.
Right.
And talk about the outcome you want. Because all you're doing in that moment is raising awareness. And this is desperately confronting for someone.
Right. So you're giving them some space to just let that sit.
Have a think about it. But Adam, really think about my intention here. My intention is to lift you higher. So that we can all be better.
Okay.
And you know, Adam, the behaviour that matters to me. And so I can't tolerate behaviour that damages other people. I can't. So, you know, what do you want to do with that? So you go away and think about it and maybe that's a Wednesday and we come back on a Monday. Okay, how'd you go? Now, person in that situation, that second conversation, does one of two things. Margo, you're wrong. And then they go persecutor on me.
Right.
And there'll be a bullying claim maybe or whatever that. Or they'll actually say, you know, thanks. what do we need to do about it? And that's when we start the coaching. Now, they'll either get there or they won't.
Right.
But they deserve a right of reply. And people cannot believe, you know, that when the rest of the world is looking on and saying, why isn't Margot doing anything about Adam? You know, well, first of all, how do you know I'm not?
Yeah.
And if I'm a good leader, then you won't know that I'm doing anything about Adam in the moment.
Hard on the situation, soft on the person.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe you're up for it, but I'm gonna coach you and I'm going to help you to be better, but you've got to want to do that.
Can I just pause you there? Because this reminds me of something actually I wrote about in the book in relation to a challenge a CEO had. And is this a case where you are, in a very human-centered way, giving me the opportunity to be successful within a certain playing field? And if I can't or I won't, you will stop the bus and allow me to get off.
100%. Yeah.
Because that's the call you're willing to make.
100%. Right. And we'll do that discreetly, we'll do that compassionately, and we'll do that generously. Because if you don't, it's going to cost you more in the long run. No. Just from a practical perspective.
No, but I want people to understand that actually you've
actually, these are the guardrails.
When you go into it, you've got some non-negotiables, and you're actually, if you can't or you won't, then you get off.
And people talk about that's exactly right.
And not fearing that decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, absolutely. Like, you will lose sleep over it.
Every
time I've done this, you know, it's taken years off my life, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
But I think the outcome has always added years back to my life. So net-net, I think I'm up.
Okay.
Because ultimately, I mean, I've done it with people who've been acting the same way for 20 years and no one's told them. You know, do our people the service of letting them know the impact they're having. And they're either up for it or they're not. And sometimes, particularly with the really nice underperformer, they're just not going to get there. And the more experienced you are as a lead, you absolutely have to give them a right of reply, but sometimes they're just not going to get there.
Right.
And that's not their fault. You know, maybe they were right for the job 20 years ago and the world's moved on. But, you know, let's be generous about this and let's treat people with respect and compassion and help them find whatever's next.
So in some ways at the other end of the scale, you can put some certain things in place to try and guide, advise, mentor, coach that person. But if they're simply not going to get it, then you're there to make the brave decision to say this isn't right for you at this point. And how can I help you be successful? But it's not going to be here.
That's right. And that's exactly right. And what we do when we're early in it, well, what I did when I was early in my leadership was go, oh, God, this person's going to be out of job. So I'm taking responsibility for their financial situation. Can't do that. It's not my responsibility. Well,
again, that's a human response,
of course,
isn't it?
Yes, it is.
To actually say, hang on, what consequences will this decision have? Perhaps significant.
That's right. So what can I do? I can't take responsibility for where they're at financially, but I can take responsibility for the way I treat them on the way out and be as generous as possible about that. Because it's not what they've done for 30 years with their finances before they met me has nothing to do with me. But, you know, we all do because we're nice people, you know, and we're trying to help. But in the end, my responsibility is to that team and to make it the best it can possibly be, because we do have to perform for the company.
Okay. So when we talk about you, I think you've called this, haven't you? Love leadership.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so we're talking about the components there being brave, clear, and fair.
Yeah.
And you've given an example. I remember talking to Carol Kaufman, who you may or may not know. She's also an author. She's Harvard faculty. And she said something to me which resonated and was reminding me of this conversation, where she said, if you you have to challenge as a leader. That's just a byproduct of it. But she always said, if you challenge this much, you've got to care this much. And if you challenge this much, then you care this much. And that always stuck with me in relation to having the courage to challenge, but always caring more.
Yeah.
And that seemed to come out in how you were framing the example conversation in relation to me about what your intention was in order to help me thrive.
Yeah.
But if I couldn't, then it wasn't going to work out.
That's right. And you really have to check your intention before you go in, because a fear intention is, I've got to get rid of Adam.
Right.
And, you know, you go in with that intention, that's going to show up. And that's not you being brave, clear, and fair. That's you being small, you know. I don't know. Actually, the love intention is, well, I don't actually know where he's at. Has anyone spoken to them about this?
Yeah, who knows what's going on in their life?
Who knows? Yeah, so find out. And I would say, in terms of the challenge, I think that's correct. A great leader also loves being challenged. A great leader will also create a team that says, hey, I talk a lot about boss, you're wrong. A great leader will be confident, love themselves enough to say, and I do it all the time, get the team together and say, here's how I'm thinking about an issue, but I've called this meeting because I want you to tell me what I'm missing.
Yeah.
That is every corporate failure ever has come. I mean, look at this post office business. You know.
It breaks your heart.
It's actually a tragedy.
Last week on the show.
I know. It's a tragedy.
And as lawyers.
Yeah. It's horrific.
I mean, that really is a miscarriage of justice. Anyway, yes.
But people were sounding the alarm, and bosses have to be alert to the fact that they actually might be wrong.
What stops people challenging a boss then?
Well, we're all very we're deferential to hierarchy.
Oh, look, we've seen that play out in cockpits time and again.
Yeah. Right. So we are differential, and the gift of that is it keeps the trains running and it keeps us safe. Like
is that the guardrail piece again?
Yeah, deference to hierarchy is important. However, that's one of the things that keeps us from telling our boss that they're wrong. The other is staying safe personally.
Yep.
Like, what if I lose my job? You know, that's a rational response. And not all bosses want to hear it, but I can guarantee for leaders who are listening to this and want to know how to be better, the more you ask your team to tell you where you're going wrong, the better your solutions will be and the safer you will be. But you must love yourself enough. You must be confident enough to say, hey, I could have got this wrong. Can you tell me?
Okay. You talked earlier, and maybe before we started this episode, about curiosity at the heart of all of this. Mm. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, we're judging machines,
right,
Adam, and that has enabled the human race to proliferate. So let's not get in the way of judgment. But, you know, I walk in here today, you're walking with me, we're all judging
Did
each other.
Did you judge me?
Absolutely. I'm deep in judgment.
I'm not even going to ask. I'm not
I try really hard.
Not brave enough.
No. But that's how we make decisions. We need to. That's what keeps us safe. And you
it
know,
does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
in some
absolutely.
Ways you might think,
yeah.
Help me here. With
But we make the mistake of thinking, and you and I know this because in law you study, there's no real thing as such thing as an objective truth, right? There's only ever, you know, the reasonable man on the Clapham omnibus. Did you learn about that?
Of course.
So there's no such thing.
The cynic in me says as soon as you go into a jury trial, the search for the truth is over. Or
okay, so you know all about this. Yeah. So to notice that actually we're making judgments and there's no objective truth is really important. So when you feel the judgment, if we go back to the conversation with Adam as the toxic high performer and I'm judging the hell
out
of him.
Just an example, by the way.
Just an example, would never have happened. No. And I'm judging the hell out of him because I'm going, Jesus, like, what are you doing to people around you? Why are you talking to me like, you can't talk to me like that. Stop being so aggressive. I'm judging the hell out of you in that moment, Adam. And the job is to then go, does he know? I wonder why. Always start with, I wonder why, because you're about to learn something. And the more uncomfortable it is for me to hear what your response is, the more I'm about to learn. So when you're in that moment and you're having conflict with someone and they're disagreeing with you and you're feeling like you just want to exit the building, that's the moment where you're about to have a big awakening. So go with it and ask three more questions about why.
It does highlight, and curiosity is one of the eight components of human-centered leadership, according to me.
Yeah.
But it also highlights just how powerful that curiosity is. Also in relation to our mood, that if you're in a pretty, you know, not a great mood, or you're feeling that, actually curiosity can help you bring you out of that.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Why? What's going on?
Why? What's going on?
What am I not seeing? What am I not understanding?
Yeah.
So you're on a bit of a mission now in relation to this.
Yeah.
And we've already talked only briefly, but just about how impactful this could be.
Yeah.
So what is the journey that you are on right now in helping leaders around love leadership?
Well, it's raising consciousness, Adam, because, you know, if I had a magic wand, I would have raised my own consciousness 20 years ago and made life a lot easier for myself. When you're leading with love, you have greater grace and ease. And that means that you step, and we all know, like, we all know those love leaders we've worked for. There might have been a coach that we played for when we were juniors, whatever. Yeah. But we all know the ones that stand out. They're the ones that go about it with grace and ease. They're the ones that go about it with a greater good intention. They're the ones that are powerful but without hubris. That's important.
Yep.
And so that's what I want to create around the world. So that's why, you know, having these conversations is very important.
So how can anyone watching or listening to this get hold of you, Margot, to continue the conversation, get you involved in their conversations?
I would love to hear from anyone who's listening and is interested in more. You can go to my website, margotfaraci.com.
Yep.
M-A-R-G-O-T-F-A-R-A-C-I.
We'll put all of this in the show notes.
And I'm on LinkedIn. I'm also on Instagram, same things.
Right.
So, and you can just message me off that.
How about the research? How do people get hold of the research?
It's on my website.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, you look up Love Leadership on my website.
Okay. Will you share that with us as well?
I absolutely will.
That's something I would
I'm
curious
about,
and I can see its absolute application.
Yeah.
So maybe we can put a link in to that as well for you.
100%.
What's the aspiration for you then in relation to the awakening that you have had around the importance of this, the work that you're doing now? What do you hope to achieve?
To end fear-based leadership globally.
Wow.
Then what are we going to do after Friday?
Coming back episode of the Leadership Enigma. Listen, Margot, you've been an absolute superstar. Thank you for coming all the way from Australia just to be on this show. Obviously, it's got nothing to do with family. Thank you so much for coming. Have you had fun?
I have. Thank you very much.
We could have talked for hours, right?
We could have. Yeah, we could have. Thanks so much.
Unfair on you. Thank you so much for coming on to the Leadership Enigma.
Thanks, Adam.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.